Hi, this is Jeannie Patel-Thompson from ListenToYourFreedom.com. We're talking about common blocks and saboteurs for those of us who are trying to turn our dreams into reality. And today we're talking with Lisa Marie Cabrelli, who is a lifestyle entrepreneur who owns and operates three businesses with seven-figure revenues as she travels the world with her family. Lisa Marie specializes in coaching small business owners and entrepreneurs who want to live an extraordinary life, maybe even a little bit like hers. So you can find out more about Lisa Marie at www.laptoplifelisa.com. So Lisa Marie, thanks so much for joining us today, and I'm so looking forward to hearing all about what you've learned and also all your experience working with your different clients.
Thanks so much. Thanks very much for having me, Jeannie. I appreciate it.
Well, and also I should also mention the other thing, because this is very impressive to me, is that you, last Christmas, you won the award from Amazon. You were one of their top 25 sellers at Christmas time. And we all know how huge Amazon is and how much crazy stinking money people make on Amazon. So I think that is a huge accomplishment and, you know, many accolades to you for doing that.
Thanks very much. That was a huge achievement for us, and we were really, really pleased with that.
You totally. So you know what? I think that alone positions you to be like an expert, because, you know, if you can hit top 25 on Amazon, I think you've dealt with a lot of your blocks and saboteurs. So that's the other reason I asked you to do this, you know, this topic with me, because I want to hear from someone who's already just blasted through a lot of those things. But then the other thing that makes you really great is you're simultaneously working with lots of entrepreneurs, small businesses, startups who are dealing with those same issues on, you know, probably a daily or weekly basis. So let me open it up by turning it over to you. And you tell us, from your work with your clients and possibly in your own journey, what are the biggest blocks and saboteurs that you see people coming up against that they have to break through in order to become successful?
Sure, absolutely. And I would not exclude myself from this list at all, Jeannie. So it's really important that you call that out. Mm-hmm. It's not, someone is not born immediately able to blast through all of these blocks and saboteurs, right? Everyone has to go through the experience, and everyone has to learn their own way through it. What's great is that because I've had the experience and gotten through it, I can help my clients through it by just helping them identify and giving them some tools and resources for how to deal with some of the most common blocks and saboteurs that get in the way of starting a business or finding your extraordinary life.
Haven't you found
sure.
with your clients that somebody can have all the pieces in place? They have all the how-to, they have a great product, they have, you know, some marketing knowledge, but if they don't deal with this piece, this crucial piece of them getting in their own way, they're never going to hit the success that they're capable of.
Absolutely, I agree. And the most devastating thing to me is when you find people who have worked really, really hard for many, many years and aren't where they're supposed to be because they haven't recognized that they have one of these blocks and saboteurs in their life. So they haven't even understood that it existed, so not even had the opportunity to work on it. So they've wasted all of this time and energy working towards something that can never happen because they've got one of these major blocks that are interfering with their progress.
Fabulous.
So basically, I mean, they all come under one category, Jeannie, and I'm sure that you know this as well. And this major category that they all come under is fear. Fear also has another name. I don't know if you've read the outstanding book by Stephen Pressfield called The War of Art.
Yes, I did. I got it after you told me to go and get it.
Oh,
I was like,
right,
oh, yeah. I did. I got the War of Art and Turning Pro.
I was going to say that's a great follow-up to the book as well called Turning Pro. Stephen Pressfield calls fear resistance, and it's not just resistance or fear. It's the combination of those two things that really are what I'm talking about, because this fear manifests itself in three ways, and some of them are super interesting that you wouldn't actually believe could be true until you've been in the situation that I have been in, coaching so many entrepreneurs and so many small business owners. The most common one, I think, has to be the fear of failure. And that's usually the one that people are the most in touch with. They understand that they're afraid to move forward because they understand that they are really frightened of failing. The way that I see this manifest itself most frequently is in perfectionism.
Right.
And perfectionism is such a complicated subject because it so often has a positive connotation. You know, everyone tells you, especially when you're younger, oh, it's so good that you're a perfectionist and you're such a type A and you're really going to go forward because you make sure that everything's right. And I actually do suffer from this particular problem, and I did when I very first started my business. I'm learning how to deal with it now. But as a perfectionist, what it means is that you use your fear of failure to justify your perfectionism, which means that you never actually ship anything. So I always tell people when they tell me that they have a time management problem, you know, they say, I have a time management problem. I can't seem to finish everything. I can't seem to meet deadlines. I never seem to get anything out on time. And I tell them, you don't have a time management problem. You have a perfectionism problem. And
right.
Your perfectionism is truly just protecting you from this idea that you could fail. So one of the things I always tell my clients is make sure that you learn how to fail. So it's, you know, a huge risk for someone to take, but I always tell them start with a small project that you know is not going to go well and finish it and ship it and experience the failure and realize that it's not going to kill you. You know, failure
that
is
you know what? That is so revolutionary. To practice failing so that you're no
Absolutely.
Longer scared of it?
Absolutely.
That is awesome.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, failure is, again, something that has a negative connotation, but actually is a really positive thing. Because if you're going to try and wait until there's absolutely no way you can fail, you're never, ever going to ship anything. So the other tool that I give to my clients is don't wait until it's perfect. Wait until it's good enough. And so whenever you start a project, don't define when the project is perfect. Define exactly the parameters that establish that project as good enough. And as soon as it hits good enough, ship it. Get it out there. Because the one thing that you're missing by being a perfectionist is one of the most important things that any business owner or somebody reaching for an extraordinary life needs to move forward, and that is the feedback of the people that are, you know, buying your products.
Yeah.
And you won't get that if you don't never ship. And you won't get it if it's perfect. You're only going to get it when it's good enough.
Well, and that brings up, like, the whole idea of I finish it and it's perfect and I get it out there and I'm done versus this is good enough, I get it out there, I get feedback, I learn what pieces are actually missing for my user, not what from my conception of what I'm doing. And then I make it even better. And then I throw it out there, and maybe I get a little bit more feedback, or that opens me up to a new market, and then they give me feedback. And this concept that what we do and what we put out there in the world is really a continually evolving type of offering rather than a one-shot deal. It's perfect. It's done, signed, sealed.
Absolutely. And what I always tell my clients is you are not your customer. You are not your customer. There's nobody just like you. And so you don't really know what your customer is looking for. Only your customer does. So I say that once you ship it, have a really solid plan for how you are going to learn. Don't just ship it and expect people to come back to you and tell you what they like and don't like. They're not going to do that. Ship it and then have a really detailed process for getting feedback and then implementing the feedback into your product, knowing that you have to have a really good idea of the problem that you want to solve, because otherwise you're going to start solving problems that aren't the problem that the product is supposed to solve, if you get what I mean, and then you're going to dilute the product.
Love it.
So shall I move on from fear of failure?
Yes, that is so fun. We could stop the call right here. We could all walk away and go, okay, that's it. I'll implement that. That will change my life. So this is fantastic. I'm just like, I'm vibrating listening to you because it's just fantastic what you're giving us today.
That's great. The next one is the one that is the most difficult one. And I see this all the time with my clients, and it surprises them no end when we actually uncover it together. And the second one is one that you would never believe exists, and it actually is a fear of success.
Right.
So many people know that they have more to offer the world than what they are currently giving, and they put themselves on the path to make sure that they are going to provide that to the world, but they never actually consider what they look like as a person once they reach their potential. And
right.
So really the fear of success is really the underlying message in the fear of success, and I've seen this, you know, with multiple clients, is I won't be who I am.
Yes.
When I'm successful, I won't be who I am. So I had a client, and it took us a really long time to uncover it, because in the life coaching component of business coaching, it's extremely co-creative, which means I won't give the answer. In the business part, I give lots of answers, and I'm really bossy. But in the life coaching part, they have to uncover it on their own. And I did have one client whose fear of success was so incapacitating, and it wasn't until she discovered the real reason of that, which was she was incredibly successful once we started coaching on her business, and the revenue started rolling in, and she completely came to a grinding halt. And what we discovered is that she grew up in poverty. She grew up never having money. She grew up with a kind of a concept that money was evil, right? And also that she didn't really deserve to have money. And when she got this glimpse of what her business could become and what it could do to her financial situation, she was terrified that she would no longer be who she was if she had money. So,
because it was so far removed from where her definition of self came from.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the tools I give to people who have a fear of success are two things. The first thing I tell them is to have a really solid vision about what success looks like. Because often it's not that they're afraid of success. They're afraid of what they don't know about success. So if they have a really solid vision of what it looks like and they're moving towards that vision, the unknown aspect doesn't come in and rear its ugly head. But there's a bigger tool than that, and that is what I call the ultimate whys. So everyone in the world sets goals. You know, everyone looks for these SMART goals, and they follow, you know, all the directions for creating a SMART goal list. Not very often do people actually ask themselves the question why they want to reach that goal. And they ask it once. Well, finding out your ultimate why, I mean the really deep what's in the core of you why, takes asking why a whole bunch of times against a goal or something that you're working on. And finding out why you want to do the project and finding out, you know, why you want to be successful is, and understanding those whys is going to give you the courage and the framework to support you when you actually reach that place that you've already vision boarded and set up for yourself.
Right.
Make sense?
Yeah. And so when you, I just want to go back to the first part of that. When you said you get your clients to have a solid vision of what success looks like, do you get them to do you get really specific with that? Like, do you say, okay, pick a number. You are earning, you know, $500,000 a year or whatever that figure is for them. And then where are you living? What does your house look like? How many cars? Like, do you get them to map it out to the smallest details of their life?
It's usually an iterative process, actually, Ginny. So usually I start with them just free writing. It's such a powerful exercise, putting a blank piece of paper in front of you, you know, turning on some music, having a glass of wine, and just sitting down and free writing what success looks like for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would bring that back to me, and yes, we would drill down into the details, and I will challenge them, you know, because a lot of people will say, okay, success to me looks like I'm earning, you know, $50,000 a year working for myself. And I will say to them, you've given me goals and you've given me, you know, things that you want that will cost more than that, right? Why is
right.
that your definition of success? And
right.
so we'll go back and forth, and they will continue to refine their, you know, initial outpouring of what they think success looks like to really, really detailed items so that they know exactly what to expect. And like you said, it's so detailed that nothing is unexpected, so there's nothing to scare them.
And I would expect that that process would also reveal a lot of their hidden fears and their probably judgments, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's, again, the things I challenge them on when they bring it back. You know, usually people aren't brave enough to go for what they really, really want. They can't even admit it to themselves.
Yeah.
So making sure that's defined is a real step forward for most people.
Yeah. Fantastic. And I love that, the ultimate why at the end of all. And then do you get to that by just when someone says, well, because this, and then do you throw back to them and say, well, what then, why that?
I actually have a whole process, an ultimate why discovery process. I have a free seminar that should be available on my website within the next couple of weeks. And actually, it takes you step by step through what exactly the ultimate whys mean, why you need them, what they're going to contribute to your life, and how you can uncover your true ultimate whys by going through this discovery process. And I've got workbooks and directions and everything. So if your readers want to sign up for my newsletter, I should be, you know, announcing that within the next couple of weeks. It's super, super, it's a real discovery for people who go through the process. They find out things about themselves that they just didn't know.
So if anybody's listening and wants to get that, the website again is laptoplifelisa.com. Excellent. Okay, what's next?
Okay, so the last one, and it's probably not the last one, but it's the last major one that I see coming up, is the fear of others. And I see so many business owners, or even so many people who are trying to take that journey towards living an extraordinary life, which is, you know, what the life coaching component of my work focuses on, is taking ordinary people who want extraordinary things and guiding them to those extraordinary things. So many of these people are incapacitated by what society has dictated to them that they should be, and what other people are going to think of their journey. So I have this kind of concept that people are really conditioned to live within what I call instant identities. So when you ask people who they are, they'll say things like, I'm an accountant, I'm a mother, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. They'll give you roles, and they won't really give you the essence of who they are. And the reason that they give you the roles is because when you tell somebody that you are this role, you have this instant identity that provides you with all of these rules and guidelines and directions for how you should live. Mm-hmm. And if you live within that instant identity, you can't go wrong. I have a story that goes with this to me, if you'd like to hear.
Oh, yeah. Lay it on us.
Okay. So when I first left my corporate job, I worked in corporate for many, many years, and I was very successful as a corporate person. And I lived the corporate instant identity, so the high-flying corporate woman. I lived that identity. I had beautiful suits, beautiful shoes. I flew all over the world with my, you know, little laptop and my cell phone constantly attached to my ear. It's like having this superhero suit that you could just put on, right? And when you put it on, you know exactly who you're supposed to be. And I was this superhero businesswoman. And it was a role that any, you know, lots and lots of people would be jealous of. And I was absolutely miserable, completely miserable in that life. And
when you weren't acting.
Sorry?
When you weren't acting, you realized you were completely miserable.
When I wasn't acting, yeah. Even in the superhero suit, I was miserable. You know, so I made a big change, and I left that life, and I left corporate world, and I took big risks, and I started my own business, and, you know, I moved to the Bahamas, and that was one of our dreams. We wanted to live in an oceanfront property on the Bahamas, and While I was living in the Bahamas, I had to travel back and forth to the U.S. quite often for my business. And so I would be sitting in the Miami airport in my, you know, really tatty cut-off jean shorts and my flip-flops, right, with my dirty feet because I never wore shoes. And, you know, I didn't have the power suit on, and I didn't have a cell phone, and I, you know, I didn't have the Prada shoes. And when I was sitting in the airport as me, truly who I was, without a superhero costume, without an instant identity, the lure and the craving to be those women again was incredibly powerful.
Wow.
And even though I knew deep down in my soul that I didn't want to be one of those women, it was, I would be so envious sitting there thinking to myself, what do these women think of me? What do these women think of me sitting here in my, you know, dirty shorts and my flip-flops, and like they're off to, you know, fly to another country to, you know, give a presentation and everything. But that, for me, made it really, really clear that instant identities are incredibly dangerous. It's like a siren song, right? You're called towards it and you end up all smashed on the rocks. And it's all about this fear of others. What do other people think of me? Now, these women didn't know that I was, you know, running my own business, living on, in an oceanfront home in the Bahamas. You know, they may have been, felt envy towards me, but all I was concerned about was I didn't have that instant identity that would be so easy because everybody would think how successful I was.
Right. And at a glance, right? Because looking at you, they wouldn't know that you were actually more successful than they were. They would have to actually sit down and talk to you and share a little bit. But for the people who are wearing the power suits, you know, there's that. I get what you're saying. It's like you can tell, like the pilot. The pilot walks out. He's wearing the pilot outfit. At a glance,
yep,
you can tell, oh, you're driving the plane. Wow, that's really great. Or, you know, or, man, your job sucks. I'd hate your job. But whatever, it can be communicated in an instant. So
yep,
he has
instant identity. But it's not who he truly is. And
exactly.
So that's what happens to people in this fear of others. They grab onto these instant identities because they're so easy to perform. But they're not really being who they truly are. And until you give up your fear of what other people think and you become who you truly are, you can't be extraordinary. Because being somebody's instant identity is just an ordinary thing. You can't be extraordinary. Right?
So I love what you're saying. I totally hear what you're saying. And then when you say, until you give up your fear of what other people think, that's where I go, wow, that is, I know for some people, that's a 10-year journey. So what?
Yeah.
How do you get people there? What are the tools that you're giving people to move them along that pathway?
Well, I have a powerful tool that really cuts into that 10-year process. And it's called the personal branding statement. And it is a statement that people develop that is focused on two major things, which is their authentic beliefs and their promises. So, and again, this will be on my website in a couple of weeks too. All these things I'm just converting from the one-on-one work with my clients to try and make them more available, because I've had a lot of people come up and say to me, you know, I can't afford one-on-one coaching, but I love the stuff you talk about. Can you make it easily available? And I'm going to try and make most of this stuff available for free on my website. So if they sign up for the newsletter, they'll get it. So the personal branding statement starts with your authentic belief. So if you truly uncover what you believe in, your beliefs will manifest behavior, and then behavior manifests performance. And you don't have room for what other people think to get in your way. And you always can go back to the fact that you've spent time working on this. You know what you believe, and it doesn't matter what other people believe or what they think about you, because you are very securely planted in what your beliefs are. And again, there's a process for uncovering these authentic beliefs, and there's some criteria that they have to meet. And then along with these beliefs, for every one of these beliefs that you establish a promise. And this promise makes sure that you continue to live by this belief and you don't get shaken off your path by the fear of what other people think. And one of the requirements, I think, which is interesting for the personal branding statement, is that it's exclusionary. And by exclusionary, I mean that you don't want to have a brand that everybody loves. I mean, it's impossible for everyone to love you. Some people are not going to like you, and some people are going to have a problem with you. But if you set yourself on the path of making sure that you understand that people aren't going to like you, and making sure that your beliefs are very clear, so that when people don't like you, you can say, "Oh, well, that's because I believe that," then you're in a more secure place. You don't want to tell a story to everyone. It's telling a story to no one. So in these exclusionary beliefs. So, for example, one of my personal beliefs that's part of one of my personal branding statement is I believe in marriage, and that means for everybody, right? So I could immediately cut out a whole bunch of people who might want to be in my tribe by saying I believe in marriage for everybody, right? And I believe in marriage. It's one of my biggest beliefs. And so my promise that goes against that belief is my marriage and all the things that my marriage needs to maintain a strong and healthy direction comes first before anything else. So that's my promise. So when you get somebody else who comes and judges you on the fact that, you know, you decided to say no to them because, you know, you had a date with your husband, you can feel secure that you don't really care about what they think because you're living your beliefs and you're living your promises. So the personal branding statement is really how you deal with this fear of other people.
That's fantastic. And I love the fact that, you know, you're standing up and saying you want people to say, "Oh, that's not for me," and go away so that you can focus on the people who are like, "She is talking to me. This is where I'm meant to be." And then, like you said, you build not just a band of followers, but you build an actual tribe. And there's a cohesiveness there, and there's a synergy that takes place when that happens. And, I mean, that's very much the way that I've experienced it in my business. I mean, I have people who've been on my list for over a decade, and they change their email and they let me know. And you know, this is, you know, tens and thousands of people. So it's people don't really realize the power and strength of that. And as you said, that willingness to step into your unique authenticity, which by definition is going to be exclusionary to certain types of people, and to be okay with that, and to see that is an absolutely fantastic, positive thing that we want to have happen.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the main reasons that I want to be exclusionary is because I don't want to disappoint anybody. I don't want to make anybody believe that they're going to get something from me that they're not going to get. Mm-hmm. And I also know that my style of coaching isn't for everyone. I'm really hard, right? I'm nurturing, but I give them real tough love. And I have a lot of expectations and I have a lot of requirements. And, you know, if I don't tell you that right up front, you're going to think I'm a right awful person by the time you're halfway through my coaching, right? Because that's not what you signed up for. You wanted a really, you know, kind, like, nurturing, airy, fairy, lovey-dovey kind of life coach. Well, that's not me. Right, so you have to be exclusionary so that you don't disappoint people. That's my biggest fear, is disappointing people who pay me for something.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Well, and it also guarantees that you get the maximum enjoyment out of your coaching business, so that you want to keep doing it and you don't get burned out and you wake up looking forward to the people you get to talk to every day.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. Yep. It's the right way to go.
That is really, really fantastic. And so do you ever have people who, when you're, like, do you put all of your coaching clients through these three points that you talked about, the fear of failure and then, you know, practicing failure, the fear of success, then creating their solid vision of what success looks like, identifying their ultimate why, and then we just talked about the fear of others, which is where they're coming up with their personal branding statement, their authentic beliefs, exclusionary. Do you have clients who balk at certain steps of this practice and just, like, do they just, like, hit a wall or they're not willing to go through it? Or did people normally get through things or do they quit?
Nobody's ever quit on me. I think that would be awful if somebody quit. I have people who take a long time to get through specific pieces. people who come in at all different points in the process, right? So the entire process I call the freedom formula, because really what the goal is of coaching is to put you in a position of freedom, the freedom to make the choices to live the life that you want to live. And so there are, like you've just mentioned, a bunch of the steps, but it's a pretty long program from start to finish. To start someone right at the beginning and take them all the way through to the end would be a very long process if it was happening one-on-one, because it's a long journey to live, to get to your extraordinary life. So you have people that come in at different places, people who don't have an issue with fear of others, people who don't have an issue with fear of failures, and then you have people that get stuck in certain areas of the process and take a really long time to get to the next step. So, yeah, I mean, I've never had anybody quit, but I have had plenty of people really struggle and get angry and show you real resistance, right? And so, I mean, that's part of being a good coach is to understand that it's not personal. I mean, it's a really difficult journey that you're guiding people through, and you're there to hold their hand until they get through the tough stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And I love the whole concept of taking fear and renaming it resistance, because fear sort of seems like something that just happens to you. And there's like, well, I'm afraid, and I can't, that's an emotional state, and what do I do with that? But resistance is more like an object. Oh, resistance. I see you. I can do this with you. I can do it. It feels more empowering if we rename those fears resistance.
Yeah, and you can give him a little personality as well. I have actually drawn my resistance. I know what he looks like.
Oh, really?
He's like a really ugly little goblin, you know?
Awesome.
And sometimes when he rears his head, I can smack him down and, you know, move forward, because sometimes him rearing his head is telling me that I'm on the right path. But sometimes, you know, when he shows himself, it's a long struggle. It's not something that anyone ever gets. I don't think it's something anyone ever gets good at. It's all, you know, fighting with your resistance is constant. It never goes away.
It's
so
a good
point. Personifying it is personifying it into a character for me works. It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen Elizabeth Gilbert's TED Talk on genius. Have you seen that?
I've looked at it. I thought I have to watch that, but just didn't get to it yet.
It's a brilliant talk, and she talks about genius in the same way that I've just talked about resistance. She talks about genius as being this separate character, right? And you basically just have to keep doing the work, and genius will pop in when it's ready. Your job is not to look for genius or try and be a genius or always be creating genius work. Your job is to just go sit down, do the work, and genius will come when it's ready. And it's the exact same with resistance. You know, our job is not to constantly look for ways to, you know, fight through the resistance. Our job is to just sit down and do the work, and the fight will happen, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting that we're talking about this, because in the module right before this, I talked about exactly that of, you know, because I'm sure this happens to you a lot as well, and people will say of me, wow, and they'll even post stuff on my Facebook. Well, that's because you're you, and you're just this amazing person, and I don't know how you get to be, and, you know, just pedestaling you and thinking that you're really remarkable. And I wrote about that along with a video of, you know, Richie Parker, who was born without his arms, and the video shows how he moves through his day. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I've seen it,
Yeah, and he's just like, he's like, well, whatever. This is what I have to work with. I just do what I can every day. And I'm like, that's exactly what I try to communicate to people. When they try to pedestal other people or think, well, they're really remarkable or they're really amazing, and I get those comments, it's like, you know what? That doesn't resonate with me at all. I think we're all the same. I think we just, it doesn't matter what's happened in our past, the traumas, the whatever we've suffered, whatever we've come into this life with, all that matters, as you said, is today. What are you going to do today? With your exact situation exactly the way it is. Not saying, well, if that changes, then I can. Or when this happens in my life, then I can. No, today. You're sleeping 3 hours at a time because you're breastfeeding a child. You're low on money. You're maybe clipping coupons. Today, what can you do? Just start there.
Yeah, just one small thing. And you just brought up another thing for me, actually, Jenny, when you were talking about that. I mean, this fear of others. can also be translated into this fear of not being as good as other people, and in this constant comparison. And one of the evils of social media is that people can create the life that they want to create on social media. I mean, if you look at my Laptop Life Lisa Instagram account, right, all you see are photos of me traveling throughout the world, having this brilliant time with my daughter and my husband, right? You don't see me desperately trying to get out of bed because I work from home and I've got no reason to get up, and I sit around in my pajamas half a day, right? And I'm supposed to have written a blog post and it's 4 o'clock and I'm still on Facebook. Like, you don't see those things. You don't see the struggles, and you don't see the bad parts of people's lives, and or how hard it was for them to get where they are, or how their life really isn't like what you're seeing or what you're believing for yourself. That's why I use the phrase for ordinary people who want extraordinary things. I'm not an extraordinary person because I live the life that I live. I'm an ordinary person who just happens to live an extraordinary life because I made it that way, you know? And my extraordinary life may not be the extraordinary life that you want. I mean, I always use my sister as an example. You know, we travel the world. We live in all different houses. I've got my own business. My sister wants nothing more than to be a stay-at-home mom, and she is extraordinary at it. She's extraordinary, and my life makes her want to throw up, right? Yeah. I mean, that's like the last kind of life that she would want. So extraordinary is your definition of extraordinary, not somebody else's. So don't look at somebody else's life and think, oh, they're so, you know, like you said, don't pedestal people, because their extraordinary life is not yours. You can get your extraordinary life at any time, and they're just ordinary people just like you are, right?
Exactly. Now, you talking about your sister brings up another question. Do you ever find with your clients that when you're looking at you know, a major block, it can be a family member or perhaps a spouse or a partner that is actively trying to block someone's success or sabotage them?
Yeah, that's in the fear of others. And I mean, the spouse is the worst, absolutely the worst. And
well,
sometimes
we have to talk about
like,
this.
I mean, sometimes I feel like a marriage counselor, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, it really, with quite a number of my clients, they have incredible resistance from their spouse. And the thing that I try and make my clients understand is that is about them. That's not about you, right? Everything that somebody says or does, every single, you know, action that somebody takes is about them. So if they are telling you that they don't want you to do what you're doing, if they are making fun of your choices, if they are actively discouraging you from taking risks, that's about their fear of you being taken away from them, right? That's about them. It's not about you. And so, and family is the same. I mean, family can be poisonous, really poisonous. And so, you know, there are ways for you to follow your own dreams without leaving your family or your spouse behind. And you can feel incredible amounts of love and dedication to your family and your spouse, but still understand that what they're doing is not right. Learning how to deal with that while still respecting them and loving them and, you know, having a strong, healthy relationship. But yeah, absolutely. It's very, very frequently, especially for women. I'm incredibly lucky, Ginny. I think that, you know, I'm taking an extended coaching class I'm always trying to keep myself up to date on what's going on. And I'm taking an extended life coaching class. And one of the things that the teacher said to me in one of my recent classes resonated with me so hard. And he said that it is true that active belief can actually make someone more successful. So if you have people who are actively believing in you, it can make you, it actually changes your genes. other people believe in you can actually change your genes. And I was about to say to you, I can pinpoint the time that my life size changed, and that's when I met my husband. He's one of, he believes in me 100%. And people who don't have that have a really hard time. So you have to try and work with your spouse or with your family to make sure that they understand why you want these things. And so back to your ultimate whys, right? And what it means to them and who you are and what your beliefs are and why it's so important you become who you're supposed to be.
And then what if someone has a husband or, you know, parents? Like, let's say someone's got parents who are super religious and they're just never going to get you. Because their world is so small. So it doesn't matter how much you love them and how much you try to educate them and how much you share your dream, they think your dream is evil, okay? What can someone like that in that situation do so that they are not pulled under and pulled back?
Again, the primary thing is to understand that every word somebody says, every action they take is about them and it's not about you. And keeping that understanding in the forefront of your mind, I mean, if your parents believe that what you're doing is evil, you have to understand that that's about their own insecurities and their own fears, and it has nothing to do with you. And then I would say that you cannot allow, you only have one life, and you cannot allow your life to be hijacked by somebody else's whys, right?
Yeah.
So many times when we are developing the ultimate why list, we find what I call deceiving whys, right? And these deceiving whys are whys that justify something that you're doing that aren't actually your whys. And usually deceiving whys are when you are living somebody else's story and not your own. So understanding what your deceiving whys are, I'll give you an example. I had a client who was a small business owner, incredibly successful, incredibly busy, and she was always complaining about her job as the PTA secretary all the time. It took up so much time. It was the women were horrible, right? And so one day I said to her, what's your reason? Why are you the PTA secretary? So we dug down and we dug down and we dug down, and finally her big ultimate why was, I am the PTA secretary because I want to be a strong role model for my son. Her son was 4 years old. Really, that was a deceiving why. The real why was, I'm afraid of what these other mothers will think about the fact that I don't stay at home with my child. That was the real why. And so people who are struggling with family members who truly believe that what you were doing is wrong need to understand that those people can make their own choices and live their own lives and live their own story.
Yeah.
You have to live your story. You only get one, right? You only get one story.
And the interesting thing, just so people who don't know what a PTA is, it's a Parent Teachers Association.
Oh, gosh.
Where your kid goes to school.
Didn't realize that.
But you know what? And what you just said about, like, her fear, I get that from my own kids. Like, my own kids will go, you suck. You're, like, the worst mom in the world. Everybody else's mom does this, this, and this. Now, because my kids are socialized in this culture where we're in the suburbs. All these women around here, most of them stay home, and they care for the kids, and they do, you know, they have chosen that particular lifestyle. And I can either, if I haven't dealt with my whys and I'm not in my authenticity, I could be just slayed with guilt when my kids say things like that to me. And I just look at them and I laugh, and I go, yeah? And do those mothers take their kids to Mexico for 2 weeks every Christmas?
Exactly.
And they go, no. And I go, yeah. And do those mothers do this and this and this and this? And then by that time, they're like laughing and they're like, all right, I'm sorry. You know, so it's like, but I could have, that could have been such a trigger into guilt. I'm going to rearrange my schedule so I can do that for them. And I'm going to, you know, but I think I love what you're saying about it comes down to really understanding not just your authentic position, but all of those little positioning statements around it. Your whys, your authentic whys, your deceiving whys. Where are you actually lying to yourself? Where are you not owning your own beliefs?
Right. Where are you not living your story? Where are you choosing to live your story for someone else? And you could be doing it for the most compassionate and noble of reasons, but it's still not your story. I mean, you could be doing something completely selflessly and your why could be, you know, something that sounded wonderful, but it's still a deceiving why because it's not your story. And unless it does, perhaps one of your ultimate whys is to be, you know, incredibly generous and give up your life for other people. Okay, if you've got that as your ultimate why, then have at it, right?
Yeah.
But if that's not your ultimate why, if your ultimate why is to live your story authentically, then you have to recognize these deceiving whys when they're hidden. They're very deceptive.
Are you comfortable to share your ultimate why, or is that something that people should keep private?
No, I mean, it's not just one ultimate why. I mean, you can have a list of many ultimate whys. It doesn't just have to be one. And my ultimate why is, I'm going to have to go to my list. Is that okay? It should just be like popping off of the top of my head, but now
it's
I'm
hard when someone puts you on the spot.
I was going to say, now I'm on the call with you. I'm feeling a little bit of pressure.
As soon as you hung up the phone, they would all pop into your head.
I know, right? Yeah.
It's interesting because when I think of my ultimate why, and I haven't done your process, but I would say, like, when I've drilled down, you know, just through my own thought processes and whatnot, and I say, at the bottom of everything I do is freedom. Because for me, there is nothing more fabulous to live and experience than freedom. So everything that I do, whether it's in, you know, the health side of my business or the life empowerment and grow your own business side of my business, and it's all connected to connecting people to their inner strength, their integrated mind, body, spirit, wisdom, which results in freedom. And why do I do that? Because I get off on that. I love it. Like when somebody gets a breakthrough and they heal themselves and they email me and they're like, I did it, my son finished college. And I'm like, that just jazzes me up like nothing else. I just scream and I do little happy dances. And so that to me is sort of the essence of joy in life.
So then my question to you, actually, Ginny, if you don't mind, may I coach you a little?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I always ask first. My question to you is, yeah, I think that's fabulous. I think freedom is definitely a driving force. I would call it more of a belief. So it's really part of your personal branding statement, because I would dig a little bit deeper and say, when that person comes back to you and they're thrilled and excited and they've had this great experience, why does it make you so happy?
Oh, love it. It makes me so happy because it resonates with the struggle and the freedom that I've overcome in my own life. And the way it plugs into how I feel when I set myself free in a certain area. So
but
it's
why?
Like... It's like
yeah, but and okay, I definitely hear you, and I believe 100% that that's a great reason. Then I would again ask you, why does the fact that it resonates so much with you make you happy?
Because it feels great.
Right? So your ultimate why would be to feel good through other people feeling good.
Right.
Do you see how that kind of shifts your driving forces a little bit? It gives you, it opens up, it's not as specific as a goal, but it opens you up so much to other opportunities by saying it's not about necessarily about freedom, and it's not necessarily about the fact that it resonates with my experience. What it is, what my ultimate why is I want to feel good by making other people feel good.
Yes.
Right. So, again, that's just a little, you know, explanation of how the ultimate why really keep digging down, like, what are your ultimate whys? So I'll give you mine, because I just found them, if you want.
Okay.
My ultimate whys is to raise my daughter so that she is happy. My ultimate whys is to have, I have six, a strong, healthy, happy marriage. To feed my creative soul is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Also to leave a legacy, leave something behind.
Mm-hmm.
One of my ultimate whys is to be generous. Huge for me. Generosity is a huge driver. And another ultimate why is to be healthy, which is, you know, unless you have your health, you can't have all of the other ultimate whys.
Absolutely.
So using those as my guideposts, so that's the what, like, that helps me define my what. So what goals will I put into place that will lead me to, you know, what goals am I putting into place with the right drivers, with these ultimate whys that are driving me correctly? And then the how of, and the how you do it, right, is through your personal branding statement. So again, your personal branding statement, it has to do with freedom. I believe in freedom, and I promise that everything I do in my business will be about leading people to freedom. That would be a personal branding statement, one personal branding statement. And again, you can have multiple beliefs.
Mm-hmm. You know,
does that make sense, or am I confusing it?
Yeah, but you know, I'll tell you what I'm, what's sticking with me. Let's go back to using me as an example. When you say, okay, so one of my ultimate whys would be that I feel good by making others feel good. That goes to me, because it's like, oh, I'm not liking the feeling of that. That feels like I need other people to be this way in order to feel good, and that doesn't feel healthy to me. It's more,
no, but that's not what we said. We didn't say the negative aspect of that, right? We said, the ultimate why is a why do you do things? So it's actually what you want. So your ultimate why is, I want to feel good by making other people feel good. You're not saying that that's exclusively how you're going to feel good. You're saying is one of the things that you want to drive your goals, so that every goal you establish can fit under one of your ultimate whys. So one of your goals is develop coaching programs that lead people to freedom. And the why you're doing that goal is, I want to feel good by making other people feel good. One of the ultimate whys that I really struggled with, in the same vein, because I think this will help you understand, Ginny, is this whole concept of leaving a legacy, right? Because I thought, well, who the hell am I? What do I have to share with people that's important enough that they would want it to be left as a legacy? But if I'm honest with myself, that's truly part of what drives me. I wanted to be an actress, right? Mm. I wanted to have recognition. I wanted to feel, quote, unquote, famous. To deny that why is going to lead me in the wrong direction.
Right. I get you. That's really...
Some of your whys, you know... Yeah, sorry.
That's really brave as well. Like what you just said is really brave, to say, well, I wanted to be an actress. I wanted fame. I wanted recognition. And I love that you were brave enough to say it and also illustrate for us that until we own those desires of ours in our authenticity, we can't manifest them in the best way for us. Because for you, like, so if you wanted to, because you wanted that didn't mean you had to be an actress.
No. It's my why. And that's why whys are better than goals. Goals are incredibly restrictive. And when you don't meet your goals, you feel awful. You feel like you failed because you don't meet your goals. Whys are much more open. And when you just live by your whys, anything can happen. You're opening yourself up to incredible amounts of opportunity. And you're basically saying, universe, here's why. Here's why I do things. Give me what goes with that why, and the universe complies.
I love that, because that's the reason I don't like goals either, is because I see them as totally limiting and inflexible. I mean, we know how fast the world is changing, how fast technology is changing. Any goal you set could be rendered obsolete a week from now when Google launches a new whatever, right? So it's, goals are just pointless and really a waste of time. But so I love the way you're saying, use your whys instead of your goals, because then you still have a focus. your energy is still channeled through a very solid intent, but in terms of your maneuverability and your flexibility and what you can then bring in is really limitless, and I love that.
And you can combine your wife too so that they feel more authentic to you. I mean, your wife should always be the ahas. That's what I say to people when they're discovering their wife. They'll know when it's a why when they go, aha, right? Ah,
yeah.
I get that. Yeah, that's why, right? So my why of leaving a legacy combined with my why of wanting to be a generous individual enables me to do the work that I do now.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Lisa Marie Cabrelli. Absolutely fabulous piece, and I'm just really glad that you were able to share all this with us. And as we said, you guys can, if you're interested in having some really, I mean, you must be an amazing coach.
Oh, thanks.
Just what you've revealed in this call, I mean, that's really fantastic. I'm sure your people see huge results from working with you. So if you're interested in coaching with Lisa Marie, or you'd like to get these parts of her freedom formula that she has automated so that, you know, it's less expensive and you can work at your own pace, you can get all that at laptoplifelisa.com. Thanks so much, Lisa Marie.
Thanks very much for your time, Jenny. I had a great conversation with you.
Awesome.